Ilana, I'm sorry to keep you waiting, but I think you're still there, right?
Yeah, I'm here.
Great. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you?
All right. Under the circumstances.
All relative, yeah.
Yeah, it's all relative. Did you hear what Matthew told us about?
I only came in at the end, but I realized that the conversation, it's interesting how I think you see that certain ideas, they start lighting up all over. So I think that we're all more or less on the same page.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that after having interviewed so many experts on almost everything, psychology, psychiatry, economics, law, medicine, whatever. We have come to the conclusion, we as the Corona Committee, I know others don't share our opinion, but we have come to the conclusion that this has never been about health. This has always been about destruction of small and medium-sized businesses, maybe more than that. And it also is about, we believe, eugenics and genocide. And that's why we spoke with Matthew, who gave us a little history lesson. And the big thing is that whenever you say this here in Germany, immediately you get a response by those who are responsible for what's going on of Nazi, Nazi, right wing, etc. But we've spoken to so many people from all over the world, and many of them, especially people of the Jewish faith or people from Israel, like in your case. I mean, I know you were born in New York. I think it was New York, wasn't it?
D.C.
Okay. Yeah. But, you know, especially people like you or Vera Sharaf, who's going to be with us in a few minutes, they keep pointing out to us, do not shy away from the parallels. We must see what happened, because if we don't see what happened back in 1933, we will not be able to draw the right conclusions, because all of a sudden, from what Matthew told us, but also from what Vera told us, all of a sudden we can see that we're fighting the same people over again that we should have brought down 80 years ago. How do you feel about this?
I think that's absolutely the case. It's not even just the same people. It's actually the same battle. You know, I see it almost as like a spiral. I mean, it's quite literally, even if you open up your Bible, it's the same attempt to really, the bottom line is to usurp God. I think that there's, I've been speaking about what's happening here in Israel for 7 months. And at some point really recently, I had to kind of take a pause because I was starting to repeat myself and really start to look at the bigger picture. And the truth is the picture keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think that there's been some brilliant conversations, you know, like Catherine Austin Fitz and Whitney Webb, and they brought this too. And actually I've been looking into things that Alison McDowell has been doing some very deep dives, and it's really extraordinary when you realize the military origins for all of this. And I'm really in a place where I'm recalibrating and rethinking much, much bigger, because I've come at this from a health freedom perspective for many, many years. And that's still a crucial part of this, but it's only a branch. And I've always known that it was a branch, but now I'm starting to, you know, the picture is coming into focus of the tree itself. And I think that's very much, you know, they call, I've heard this from many different places, how they accuse everyone of being right wing, except here in Israel, when Bibi was prime minister, he would accuse people of being left wing. So just so you know, it's just whatever speaks against, you know. And I know that it's important here. This is exactly the point that we have voices of it. The whole point of history was, did you get it yet? Did you get it yet? We did this before. No, you didn't get it yet. But what's tremendous about this, you know, this battle is, I mean, obviously it's never been played on such a field before. I mean, this is all of us. And while it's really, I mean, it gives you pause, you know, it gives you sleepless nights. But actually the comfort that I found in the past day or two is that if it's this big, if it's this all encompassing, then this really is it. There's nothing after this. And well, not only does that sort of leave you with nothing else to do but fight it, but to know that really this is where it all comes together. And this is really the opportunity to, because the awakening is really so profound that we have opportunities here. I mean, there is a real genuine and bright light in this really, you know, massive cloud of dark. That's what we're doing here.
I'll translate this. Also, wir haben ja schon mal mit Ilana Rachel Daniels gesprochen. Die ist ursprünglich in D.C., in Washington, D.C., geboren und aufgewachsen. Ist aber, glaube ich, seit 14 Jahren, hat sie letztes Mal gesagt, in Israel. Und ich habe ihr gesagt, dass wir hier in Deutschland und in ganz Europa eigentlich, überall auf der Welt, immer dann, wenn wir es wagen, die öffentliche Meinung, also die vorgebliche öffentliche Meinung der Mainstream-Medien und der Politik zu kritisieren oder auch nur zu hinterfragen, immer nur ein und dasselbe Echo kriegen, nämlich rechts, rechts, Nazi, Nazi. Wie es dieser wunderbare Comedian Nikolai Binner klasse karikiert hat. Und sie sagt, ja, das ist überall so. Wir sind nicht nur, wie uns das neulich ja schon mal Vera Sharaf gesagt hat, wir kämpfen nicht nur gegen dieselben Leute von damals, also sie, die das ja geschichtlich mitgemacht hat, persönlich mitgemacht hat, gegen dieselben Leute von damals, sondern Ilana sagt, das ist sogar dieselbe Schlacht, die wir hier kämpfen, die einfach nicht beendet worden ist, sondern die hinter den Kulissen weitergegangen ist. Diese Menschen auf der anderen Seite spielen offenbar Gott. Das allein wird schon ausreichen, um sie über die Klippe fallen zu lassen, weil die Erde ist ja doch keine Scheibe oder vielleicht doch. Das sage ich, das hat nicht sie gesagt. So was Dummes würde sie nie sagen. Aber sie sagt, das Bild, was man sehen kann, wird immer größer und größer. Sie hat da auf einem kleineren Spielfeld angefangen. Seit 9 Monaten versucht sie in Israel diese Dinge an die Öffentlichkeit zu bringen. Das Bild wird immer größer, was man erkennen muss. Wir sind jetzt eben weg von der Gesundheit. Wir sind jetzt bei Eugenik und bei Genozid. Und dieses Bild wird komplettiert auch zum Beispiel durch diese herausragend guten Sachen von Catherine Austin Fitz. Ich habe da dieses Buch, das sollten wir vielleicht veröffentlichen, dieses End of Currencies, das ist ziemlich genial. Weil da auch dieser ganze Eugenik-Kram mit drin ist, aber auch die Tatsache, dass man uns versucht zu digitalisieren, die Menschen zu digitalisieren und dann digitale Währungen uns zuzubilligen. Wohlgemerkt, das ist eine Idee, dazu wird es nicht kommen. Und sie sagt, Ilana sagt, ich habe das Ganze immer aus einer Gesundheits- oder einer freiheitlichen Gesundheitsperspektive, Health Freedom Perspective, gesehen. Und auch ihr schlägt natürlich Widerstand entgegen, nur dass es in Israel nicht heißt rechts, rechts, Nazi, Nazi, sondern in Israel werden die als links bezeichnet und das ist da das Schimpfwort, also das, was gerade passt. Sie sagt aber auch, das Tolle an der Schlacht, die gerade gekämpft wird, ist, dass es noch nie ein so großes Schlachtfeld gegeben hat, auf dem das gespielt wurde. Selbst die Weltkriege waren nicht so, dass jeder davon betroffen wurde, potenziell jeder davon betroffen wurde. Jetzt geht es um uns alle, sagt sie. Und das ist es. Hiernach wird es nichts mehr geben. Wenn wir hier die Sache schlecht spielen, dann wird es nichts mehr geben. Deswegen bleibt auch gar keine andere Wahl, als zu kämpfen. Aber das, was sie auch wahrnimmt, auch aus unserer Sicht ist das so, dass Aufwachen, so nennt sie das, geht massiv voran. Viel schneller, als die andere Seite das für möglich gehalten hat. Wahrscheinlich ist das einer der Gründe, warum so viele Fehler gemacht wurden. Okay, we've just gotten new figures concerning the, I think I sent you that clip by Tom, in which Tom Renz explains what's really going on in the U.S. Is that something, I'm sure it's not being reported in the mainstream media in Israel, it's not reported here, but is it something that behind the scenes people take notice of, or is it completely kept secret that the true figures are hidden from us?
As far as anyone who is awake or awakening here in Israel. So we are absolutely aware of what's happening in bears and watching it since the beginning. Mm-hmm. And actually, there's a friend of mine, a scientist in Haifa, who did a study to break down those numbers. As far as mainstream media, it's absent. It is completely absent. What's happening, and to this day, again, 7 months of discussing this, they started this injection program in mid-December. I really can't explain the complete absence of critical thinking on the part of Israeli citizens. I have a couple ideas. You have a state that's literally lived in a state of emergency since its onset, so you have a state that's literally, a people who's had to rely on its government for safety in a very immediate way, unlike any other country really has. But that also goes so far. But there really is a sort of epidemic of lack of accountability, of someone else will take care of it for me, to the point, and especially when it comes to our Ministry of Health, there is no greater voice than that. It's not a matter of believing. There's not a question being asked. And as I might have said, since early days when there was immediate reports of, people dying immediately after the jab, there's been nothing, except it was except the most extraordinary cases, that come up. I mean, it's been completely absent. So as far as bears, and to the point, actually, I was looking earlier today at the news that now when we see such a profound vaccine failure, of course, vaccine, we use the term loosely here. I literally saw the quote from a few doctors who were arguing against the vaccine failure, claiming exactly that the data was not collected correctly, saying, oh, I have a patient who he's in his 80s, but his oxygen level only drops slightly, and they're calling him a serious case. Therefore, so she's complaining from the other side of exactly the same thing that we've been saying. But, the blinders remain. Mm-hmm. So certainly as far as that goes, yeah.
Oh, man.
And how many people are vaccinated now in Israel? And, how many official dead people do you have? Or, side effects? Is there anything?
Oh, side effects don't exist. It's all fairy dust. There's really no discussion of side effects. And actually, we ourselves, we put in a FOIA for how many died. And our response from the Ministry of Health was that they don't know. They don't know. Get back to us in a month. that was the reply.
And do you have access to statistics? If there's been excess deaths now, is there anything official? I mean, not related to the vaccine, but maybe just in general that you have more deaths, could be corona deaths or something like that?
So with the numbers, I think they would say around 6 million. Remember, we're 9 million. So I think they said somewhere around the 6 million marker, ironically, it has been jabbed at least once. And the majority of that, the figures that the way that came out, there was excess death in January and February, I believe. We saw excess because the majority, it was some 50%. Of the people who wanted to take the jab, they rushed to do it then. And that's when we saw the excess. Since then, in the many months since then, it's been a trickle of people who are really only strong-armed into taking it. So we haven't seen any excess mortality in our numbers since then. That all came out when literally the 50% of the people and the 50% of the country who got it went and got it in those early months. Mm-hmm. And now really quite clearly it's to travel, I mean, that's why they're getting it. And now, of course, since they've moved this onto the children, an even greater silence. I mean, there is not a single breathing word about any child being injured by this. And the numbers show that I think they said something like 25%, 30% of 10 to 19 have taken the jab, which is a lot. And it's more than distressing, especially when you consider that there has not been one single corona death. I don't just mean of corona. I mean even with corona under 20 in Israel at all. Not a single one.
Yeah. Okay, also, Viviane hat eben gefragt, wie viele Menschen denn inzwischen geimpft sind, ob es Zahlen gibt, konkrete Zahlen dazu, was mit den Nebeneffekten ist, mit den Nebenwirkungen ist. Und Ilana sagt, ja, es gab eine Anfrage nach dem FOIA, das ist der Freedom of Information Act, der so ungefähr funktioniert wie der in den USA. Wie viele sind denn nun gestorben? Und das Gesundheitsministerium sagt, wissen wir nicht. Es sind insgesamt an die 6 Millionen angeblich wenigstens einmal geimpft worden von über 9 Millionen Menschen in Israel. Seit Monaten, sagt sie, sind aber nur noch ganz wenige. Also die Leute, die geimpft werden wollten, die mitgespielt haben, die sind gleich zu Anfang geimpft worden. Seit Monaten tröpfelt das vor sich hin, sind nur noch ganz wenige Impfwillige da. Inzwischen ist man aber bei den Kindern angekommen. Es sollen 20-30% der 10- bis 19-Jährigen geimpft worden sein, wobei sie darauf hinweist, dass es nicht einen einzigen Todesfall gibt, Corona-Toten, in dieser Altersgruppe. Keinen einzigen, weder mit noch an. Trotzdem ist da geimpft worden. Ja, ansonsten werden all diese offiziellen Zahlen auch insbesondere das, was wir vorhin von Tom Renz gesehen haben, in der Gruppe derjenigen, die sie als Aufgewachte bezeichnet. Da weiß das jeder. Aber offiziell wird das alles totgeschwiegen. Sie hat einen Freund in Haifa, der weiß das natürlich auch alles. Aber es sind eben nur diese Aufgewachten in den Mainstream-Medien. Absolut gar nichts. Es wird komplett ignoriert. Es gibt eine Epidemie des Fehlens jeglicher Verantwortlichkeit. Das Gesundheitsministerium wird von allen, also nicht von den Aufgewachten, aber von allen als die einzige Informationsquelle gesehen. Da werden keine, und natürlich die Mainstream-Medien, die das berichten, was das Gesundheitsministerium sagt, aber da werden keine Fragen gestellt, es gibt kein Echo, trotz einiger Berichte über Tote nach Impfungen, aber da wird das alles runtergespielt, da wird gesagt, naja, das sind irgendwelche ganz anderen Sachen, die da zugeführt haben. Jetzt inzwischen wird immer offensichtlicher, dass die Impfungen in Anführungsstrichen überhaupt gar keine Wirkung haben. Und da wird dann von den Ärzten, die sich dazu äußern oder versuchen zu äußern, gesagt, ja, das wird irgendwie nicht wirklich ordentlich ermittelt, die Daten, da sei wohl ein Fehler passiert. There is a new study out. I think there's both an Israeli study and one from a group of Europeans. It's called Science Files. And it says that not only is the efficacy far less than what they claim. It's zero. It's zero. That's what it says in Science Files. But of course, that's another one of the another piece of news that nobody wants to know in the mainstream media, huh?
Right, but it's implicit because we're already discussing a third booster. They've apparently made plans to start with Moderna August 1st. I mean, obviously, all of this is implicit if you look between the lines or, I don't know, up from a hole. But yeah, I think it's 100% clear.
So, but how do they, I mean, what is the booster for? I mean, if you have a third booster, doesn't that mean that the first two shots didn't do the job?
Well, also, if this, you know, super duper special Delta variant is not affected whatsoever by the vaccine, then why, pray tell, must we all run out and get this shot? It's literally, it doesn't hold the shallowest of water. It's inexplicable. Seriously, if you are telling everybody they're in danger, but that it also you're telling them the same side that it doesn't actually work against this variant, it's inexplicable. I mean, it's tumbling down, really. And which is why we see, you know, ever increasing aggression, really a purely aggressive measures. I don't know how curious you are about what's happened since we've got our BV 2.0 in government, Naftali Bennett, you know, but he's just, you know, he's just coming at it with as much aggressive behaviors as he can. So they're, you know, we're all expecting to be locked down again come holiday time. You know, they actually go so far as to board, they're trying to keep us from travel, and they actually have gone so far as to board planes and have removed nearly 100 people who have tried to go to destinations of red countries. You know, we have bill after bill. The very first thing this government did when he came in, this new Naftali Bennett's government, was to give themselves the right, to make emergency law, and then to go ahead and lengthen the state of emergency. That was the first thing, and then the second thing was to go ahead and do that, and that's exactly what we see. But, you know, I want to say something, because I mean, we all know the situation's bad here. It's comparable. We can all, like, exchange bruises, you know, because it's really, you know, it's I mean, it really does never cease to amaze the details, because really that's where the life, and that's where this is happening. It's in the details. So I do think that's important. But a couple of things I want to say about what's happening here in Israel, which sort of, you know, I had my first sort of bolt upright moment in December when this whole, you know, Pfizer contract, this whole injection program began. But my second bolt upright moment was when about a month and a half ago, a news item came out about something called the Nimbus Project. And that is what the our Ministry of Finance, this was really extraordinary to me. Our Ministry of Finance signed a 7-year contract with Google and Amazon. And I want to read to you exactly what that entails. So prior to this, you know, especially us being, you know, our issue, you know, our central role in the cyber world is obviously, there's a lot to discuss there. But let's just go ahead and say that prior to this, all of our government and army and all of our information, of course, was in decentralized, dozens and dozens of decentralized clouds across the world. So this is a project that literally put all of our government computer systems to Google and Amazon data clouds. That means they're going to manage all of Israel's official non-classified data and computerized applications, including everything from government and military payrolls to welfare payments to government pensions, including all the medical files of all Israelis, including their personal and corporate tax returns. So why did that alarm me so much? I think that we have seen, obviously, throughout history where governments prey on its own people. So as alarming as this whole contract with Pfizer and this rollout and this operation has been, it's still, we could calculate it into predatory behavior that we could recognize from governments. But what this means, you're talking about two companies, not only who they were literally what I call the Mordor of all tech giants, you know, but you literally have these companies have directly made petitions to destroy contracts with Israel prior. You know, they have stood up against against the governing body of Israel in past history. So what you have is that, you know, so for a government to endanger its people is one conversation, but for a government to literally risk the very state itself, to me was extraordinary. And what it indicated was that we are really continuing to be a forerunner in this fourth industrial revolution, and that this is really already at an intermediate stage. You understand? I mean, I don't think anybody in these rooms wants to put all their information in Amazon and Google, never mind the state of Israel. So to me, that was really extraordinary. And another part, which is a very murky, and I have very little information because there's very little information available. There's another bill that was very difficult to find. Someone who is looking very closely found it and raised it. And not only was it difficult to find, meaning obscured from the public, but also it's not even signed by any MK, by any of our Knesset members. And it's this, so in Israel, you have about 93% of the land of Israel is owned by our government or foreign governments. And as is well known, the Vatican owns quite a lot of land, also here in Jerusalem. In fact, the land that the Supreme Court and the Knesset sits on is actually owned by the Vatican, which is interesting, little tidbit of information. But so this bill was meant to clarify that land ownership, but it was left so vague that it actually allows for potential governance of the church in Israel, which would mean Israel could potentially not even be under our own rule anymore, which is, again, this is in very early stages. It's written in language that you can't understand no matter what language you speak. And again, not even signed, but it really goes to imply that we are heading, kind of all systems are go.
Of giving up the entire country to private entities and the people who are behind these private entities, including the Vatican.
Well, the two different things. There's the data cloud that goes to Amazon and Google, 7 years of that. And then there's this obscure, very murky,
which has not been signed yet. Yeah, I got that.
Whichever parts of the land there's that could imply governance as well, which is unthinkable, really.
Okay, I'll translate this. Also, sie hat von zwei Projekten berichtet. Das eine ist schon spruchreif und fertig. Das ist das NIMBYS-Projekt des Ministeriums für Finanzen, also des Finanzministeriums. Die haben einen 3-Jahres-Vertrag mit Google und Amazon.
7 Jahre.
7 Jahre, ich habe es falsch geschrieben hier. 7 Jahre. Ein 7-Jahres-Vertrag mit Google und Amazon, das sind die Bösesten der Bösen, geschlossen. Und danach werden sämtliche Regierungssysteme gemäß diesem Vertrag in die Hände von Google und Amazon gegeben. Alle Gesundheitsdaten der gesamten Bevölkerung, alle Daten über zum Beispiel die Sozialversorgung, die Wohlfahrtseinrichtungen, die Pensionen und so weiter, alles landet bei Google und Amazon für 7 Jahre. Und sie sagt, dass die Regierung ihre eigene Bevölkerung in Gefahr bringt, dass sie sie ausplündert. Na gut, damit hat man schon seit einiger Zeit leben können. Aber hier wird das gesamte Volk, das gesamte israelische Volk praktisch in die Hände dieser privaten Organisation und deren Hintermänner gegeben. Und das Zweite ist noch nicht unterschrieben. Das ist bisher nur ein echter Gesetzesvorschlag. Das ist ja noch schlimmer. Also ich weiß nicht, war das jetzt 93% des gesamten Landes gehört der Öffentlichkeit, gehört der Regierung, jedenfalls nicht privaten. Und dann, sagt sie so ganz nebenbei, gehört auch dem Vatikan sehr viel Land in Israel, zum Beispiel das Land, wo die Knesset, also sozusagen der Bundestag draufsteht. Da gibt es, glücklicherweise noch nicht unterschrieben, aber da gibt es das Potenzial sogar, dass die Kirche, das kann nur die katholische Kirche sein, die als Landbesitzer hier unterwegs ist, als Landeigentümer unterwegs ist, dass die am Ende die faktisch Regierenden werden. That is so outrageous, but doesn't, and nobody knows about this because these people are being kept in the dark.
These are matters of public record and people speak out, but you have also even on the side of people awake, there's I think the discussion that I believe that you guys were having earlier before I came on, and one that I've been just kind of beginning to really get past the door in, is about the unprecedented.
Yeah.
I think we're talking about things that it's a new limb. It's the horseless carriage. We have no definition for these things. Even this whole battle we've been fighting, we're relating it to health and the jabs and mRNA, and this is a very real thing, but this is, really, when you start to dig deep and you and you start to see some of the technologies that are well underway, that have already been practiced on people, you know, poor people and people who they could practice them on, you understand that the powers that be are really, you know, they're looking to control, you know, from the microbial to the space. I mean, I'm starting to learn myself this language that's really taking it way past injections and that type of thing to understand that, you know, and it's things that we all know. I think those of us who have been sitting here for the past however long, we understood that this idea of a green pass can easily mean, you know, like Catherine Austin Fitz has said, you know, they can switch into your financial and keep you wedged into a 5-mile radius. But this can also start to look into, you know, wearables that track your that track you in order to this is really a parasitic entity that we're looking at that is really looking to humans to really essentially be the battery. And I sort of was thinking and joking, well, I guess this is why, you know, ivermectin works so well, because this is a parasitic entity, you know, that we're dealing with here, you know. But you're really talking about levels that they are incredibly dark, and I think scary, and I think people simply don't even just have the foundation to start to work with it, and they don't want to, because it had you fight that. But I do want to say that I actually, and I do believe this, I really do think that as we hit up against this tremendous macro of power, of money. I mean, this is not about money. These people have more money than you could ever. This is way beyond that. This is about achieving something. This is like literally, again, trying to usurp God himself. And but I really think that as we hit up against it, it's quite literally in the micro where the revolution happens. I actually do believe that. I think that these, you know, mundane efforts of ours to get together and to create communities and to build gardens and to use cash and all of these things, they matter. And to start thinking about how we live our lives and how we school our children, this is actually where the revolution happens. And I don't think that it's, I don't think you could make light of it. And I think the answer now is the answer that has always been, which is that when we all wake up, this is when it ends. And it's why those of us are absolutely endlessly driven to continue to sound the alarm, because I mean, that's still the answer. That's still the winning, you know, balance.
That definitely is the answer. And it appears from what we just heard from Matthew and others before him, he keeps mentioning that these people, the people on the other side, and maybe the people who are pulling their strings, or the entities who are pulling their strings, that they think in computer models. They cannot deal with compassion, enthusiasm, emotions, empathy. They cannot deal with that. They cannot deal with creativity. And that's why I fully agree with you 100%. It is up to us to recover our human feelings, emotions, get in touch with each other, and fight these structures, disconnect from the global corporations and the global NGOs and those evil forces behind them. And I think that's what we're doing right now. We don't have to wait until the fall. It's happening right now. And I think that's why most of us, even though this is it's bizarre, it's unprecedented, as you said, but most of us are glad that we can finally see what's really going on, and that we can now deal with it in the way that I just described and you just described.
And I think it's also interesting that they seem to feel it as well, you know, that more and more people are waking up to, like, to see what's going on, really, because we can see a lot of very hectic activities, you know, yeah. That the whatever that we have have, you know, with now this political party that we joined. And so it's now being attacked on a variety of levels. You know, they're trying to frame some of the candidates for the upcoming, you know, elections. And a lot of things going on, like trying to sort of infiltrate organizations in order to make them look ridiculous or like frame them in a certain light so they don't get, you know, they're not so interesting anymore for the normal people. But at the same time, you know, I just read a poll that they did, the University of Erfurt did, and it shows that there's quite a lot of people, I think it's only 30%, you know, only 30% believe what the government says with regard to the coronavirus or like this whole thing, what's going on. And so it's 70% who, a huge amount, who have serious doubts. And we see that it's like, I think it said it was like 8 million people who'd be willing to go to demonstrations, you know. So it's a lot of things going on, and they have, at the same time, you know, embarked on really bizarre activities in order to get people to get vaccinated, like, for instance, having a, you know, like what you call this, like a tent set up in front of IKEA where you can get vaccinated just before you shop, or, you know, that you get a
shop free, till you drop, really.
A free meal or something like that when you go to, you know, to McDonald's and get the shot. Like, it's really bizarre, you know, and a lot of people see this now that it's just grotesque, you know.
Yeah, it's absolutely bizarre behavior. I mean, what you see coming out of the mouth of the American government and Australia as well. I read a clip yesterday from Australia that she literally told people not to speak to one another if they run into each other in the grocery store. I mean, I think that number one, this is an information war. And we've already gotten to the point where we think, oh, you know, we're so used to it on social media. Oh, I just got out of Facebook jail. Oh, I've been suspended from Twitter. We've already normalized this. But it's much more than that. Same way when the government, you know, statistics themselves are skewed. And so I think that you're right. I think that really, you know, you have maybe those of us rather on a far end, and you have people, but there's a whole bunch of people in between. There's a whole spectrum of people living in the gray. But they're afraid to speak out because they think the majority. But the truth of the matter is just the way there's only a handful of us speaking out on one side. There's really only a handful of the other people on the other side speaking out. It's those same faces as well. And they're very loud. And they make it look like, because, of course, they're the ones flashing, you know, the news. Yep. But it's actually, they're not that many. They're not. Everybody here wants to get on with their life.
It's a grand illusion. Before I translate this, let's welcome Vera, who is also with us. Have you two met? Vera, have you met Ilana?
She's coming in. We have not met in person, but we've spoken. Yes.
Okay, good.
She's
in
mute.
Hi, Vera.
Hi, Vera. Can you hear us?
Now I can hear you, yes.
Did you hear what we were talking about?
Of course.
we have come, I mean, a year ago when we first started our Corona Investigative Committee, had anybody told me what we're talking about right now, I really would have told them to take their pills and go see a doctor. But it is now reality. On the one hand, it's pretty monstrous, it's frightening, and on the other hand, it looks as though more and more people are waking up, and this thing is coming to a head, not in a few months, it's happening right now. It's definitely never been about health. It's always been, from the very start, it's been about the destruction of the economy, shifting money up to the elites, to the very rich, and it's definitely about eugenics and genocide. And I think it's about time that we call a spade a spade. What do you think?
Well, that's really been my role from this whole start, is, and the only reason I came out, sort of, because somehow I have not yet been, you know, really pilloried. Everyone else who touches the Holocaust and what is going on contemporary is immediately shot down. So that's why I have to do this. It's hard to bear witness again.
Yeah.
And on a grand, even a bigger scale, and one that I can understand better than certainly as a child before. But the connecting threads are just so strong that by ignoring them, we don't get to the kernel. And I listened to, you know, Lana, it's, she's really living in the toughest country where this is being rolled out. I mean, as Bourla said, Israel is the world's lab, mm-hmm. a lab. And who would want to be, you know, really, who would want to be a guinea pig to something completely experimental, to a genetic tinkering is always dangerous because you don't know where it leads. And surely they don't know everything where it leads. They think they know enough to use it to their advantage, but they really don't know. And I guess the only reason that nuclear weapons are out of favor is because they realized they couldn't protect themselves. Whereas this, yes, this they can pretty much control. Now, I won't take up too much of your time because a great deal of what I've said you've already documented. But I do want to remind you that, yes, the oligarchs and the Schwab and Gates and all of them are in certain controlling positions. They're not the only ones, of course. But then as now, without the medical establishment, they couldn't do it. Okay. This needs to be highlighted more. And essentially, you know, the Nuremberg Code does it because the Nuremberg Code and the trials, they put the doctors on the dock. This doesn't happen in public health. We've never had public health officials, medical doctors, who established policies that killed, policies that should never have gone into effect. They were never held to account, just as they aren't now. The closest parallel is, of course, the destruction of the nursing home lives. That was a butchery. Hmm. It went exactly the T4 rationale, right?
Yeah.
They're worthless eaters, and you get rid of the economic burden. And it happened in the wealthiest nations of the world. Mm-hmm. Okay? Every Western European country participated in one way or another. In some, it was, as it was in T4, medical murder with morphine injections. In others, it was neglect.
Yeah.
Failure to treat. Mm-hmm. This is murder, and particularly since it was doctors who were involved, both in carrying it out and in establishing these policies. Mm-hmm. Now, what we have seen, those of us who have been talking to you and others, of course, is that there is a commonality between all the different countries. The policies are pretty much the same. There are a few changes, a few wrinkles. You know, you could say the color is different, but really, they seem to be using the same script, the same format, the same protocol. First, it's the elderly, the disabled. Now, the pregnant women and the children. Now, what could be a greater crime against humanity?
Yeah.
And I think the part that needs, somehow we have to crack the media. You know, I think that what's needed are some outrageous demonstrations. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of, you know, the AIDS epidemic. Now, by the way, the medical Huguenot, really, this medical dictatorship, this public-private partnerships all over, yes, government and corporations. This really mushroomed during the AIDS epidemic. When Mandela, when he with his South African country wanted to both manufacture and import drugs, non-patented drugs, to save money and to save lives. Bill Gates organized 39 companies to sue South Africa. Ooh. That's when it began. That's when the control began and when medicine really shifted. It took decades, you know, for medicine to shift to the absolutely profit-motivated, and at the same time, it put a value on human lives. Both of those things came out of the Nazi period, really. They kind of dusted off, I think, some of the Nazi tactics and policies. And we now, of course, are living in a way where there's no human value in public health. Mm-hmm. How did that happen? It happened by having taken over government agencies, public health agencies. Everyone now is really, I don't know whether to call it bribe or kickbacks or what, it's endemic. The fact is that all the contracts for these vaccines are under military lock and key, secret. No one at all said that there it had anything to do with terrorism, right? So there's no war aspect to it at all, no military, and yet it's all military, not just in the United States, the warp speed, but everywhere. In Israel, too, when they tried to get the contract, it most of it was redacted. Mm-hmm. I want to bring to your attention, though, something that I don't know that you know about, and I will only give you a few kernels of what Whitney Webb and Jeffrey Laredo have documented, and that is direct eugenics connection to COVID vaccine. The developers of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine have lots of undisclosed ties to the renamed British Eugenics Society. Also, to other eugenics-linked institutions, including Wellcome Trust, which is GlaxoSmithKline. Adrian Hill of the Jenner Institute at Oxford is the lead developer of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. He's closely connected to the Galton Institute, named after Francis Galton, the father of eugenics. The goal of the Eugenics Society, the British Eugenics Society, is to improve the racial stock by reducing population. Adrian Hill also leads research for Wellcome Trust, which conducts most of its research studies aimed at finding genetic bases for susceptibility to different infectious diseases, in particular severe respiratory infections. They conduct these in Africa. And the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine is, of course, heavily promoted, the vaccine of choice in the developing world. Gates Foundation is heavily invested in this vaccine. The main investors in the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine include former executives of Deutsche Bank, Google, and the UK government. I suggest you look up developers of Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine tied to UK eugenics movement by Jeffrey Lofredo and Whitney Webb.
That's news.
It's documented carefully, and it gives you plenty of material for lawsuit.
We'll have to take a very close look at that. This is complete loose news to us. I don't think any of us have heard of this before.
That's really the only reason I said, okay, I'll come to it.
Okay, great.
Because I didn't want to, you know, but this is terribly important.
Yes.
When you have real direct continuity like that, and the money is there, I a little bit disagree with, but not much. Mm-hmm. Power is the main thing.
Yeah.
The control is the main thing. But they know that the money isn't just for them for living and all that. We couldn't possibly even imagine, of course. But having so much money, just think how much they can bribe. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that every single head of state who has not been assassinated, that is, has been both bribed and threatened. Mm-hmm. That's why every country is in one way or, you know, to a lesser or more degree, prisoner. Mm-hmm. We're all kind of prisoners of whoever is calling the shots.
But the thing is, they bribe the leaders of these countries. It's not the people. They cannot be bribed, and they cannot be threatened.
Mm-hmm. No, of course not. They bribe the leaders. They bribe the various institutions, all the medical institutions. Mm-hmm. That's a long time kind of standing thing. I mean, at the time, it must be about 20 years ago when the American Medical Association sold its membership list to pharmaceutical companies. That was the beginning. So that the pharmaceuticals have direct access to doctors' prescribing numbers.
Wow.
So it's been a long time that this has been turned into essentially now it's a killing tool.
Yeah.
It's a murder, medical murder. They use it, you know, few go after the medical establishment the way I do. But I feel it's terribly important. It's not that I'm, you know, particularly against doctors. No, individual doctors who regard the Hippocratic Oath as, you know, relevant, are the people that, you know, that we trust. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's been totally compromised, infiltrated, and turned into an army of murderers.
Yeah, and that's been happening ever since the Rockefellers et al. Turned their oil fortunes into the pharmaceutical industry at the beginning of the last century.
Right.
And this has been going on for way too long. That's why we have to stop it now.
I know, and you know, and I'm sure you know that, yes, you discussed before, I heard, as far as the percentage of people who do and aren't getting along and are just the silent majority, we've always called them that, and they are. Mm-hmm. Of course, in the United States, we also have the red states. Mm-hmm. And they're not quite silent, but they're watching carefully and they don't go along with any of it.
Okay.
So
that's extremely important information you're giving us here. I know you, we're going to let you go in a second. Let me just quickly translate this.
Also wir haben eben noch von Ilana gehört, dass das, mit dem wir es hier zu tun haben, etwas nie dagewesen ist, ist wie zum Beispiel die Erfindung der pferdelosen Kutsche, also des Autos. Aber wenn man tief genug reinsticht in die ganze Soße, die wir im Moment sehen können, dann sieht man schon, dass die Machtstrukturen, die wir jetzt immer deutlicher erkennen können, alles versuchen, um uns zu kontrollieren. Dieser Green Pass, mit der uns vollständig kontrollieren können soll, wenn er denn jemals so kommt, macht es nicht nur möglich, unsere Bewegungen auf 5 Meilen, auf einen 5-Meilen-Radius zu beschränken, sondern dass wir werden dadurch als Menschen zu Batterien gemacht für diese tragbaren Computergeschichten. In Wahrheit sind das parasitäre Entitäten, die uns hier auflauern. Und ich glaube, dieser Begriff, der wird uns noch öfter vorkommen. In Wahrheit aber, sagt sie auch gleichzeitig, stoßen wir gegen diese Makro-Decke aus Macht. Aber unten im Mikrobereich, da wo wir uns organisieren, da passiert die Revolution. Sie hat nochmal Bezug genommen auf Catherine Austin Fitz. Möglichst viel Cash benutzen, unsere regionalen Strukturen aufbauen. Und sie sagt nochmal, wenn wir alle aufwachen würden, das passiert gerade, dann endet das sofort. Dafür, dass es so ist und dafür, dass die andere Seite das auch merkt, sprechen die hektischen Aktivitäten, die wir sehen in Frankreich, USA, Australien. In den USA sagt Joe Biden, wir müssen jetzt private Konversationen zensieren. In Frankreich droht man mit Impfzwang. In Australien darf man öffentlich schon gar nichts mehr über Impfungen sagen. Und Vera hat das Ganze jetzt ergänzt. Und sie sagt, der einzige Grund, warum sie jetzt noch mal hier bei uns ist, denn sie ist ja eine vielgefragte Frau, ist der, dass es tatsächlich jetzt endlich soweit ist, dass man die Dinger beim Namen nennen kann, to call a spade a spade. Also, dass man sagen kann, hier geht's um Eugenik, hier geht's um Genozid. So, genau so sagt sie, ist es. Es sei für sie sehr schwer, nochmal sozusagen Zeuge in einem solchen Prozess zu sein. Aber die verschiedenen Elemente, die sie damals gesehen haben, jetzt ist sie ja erwachsen, da kann sie das besser erkennen als Kind. Aber die verschiedenen Elemente sind so offensichtlich, dass man sie, die gleichen Elemente, die damals in den verschiedenen Zeiten im Dritten Reich und die bei uns jetzt passieren, sind so offensichtlich, diese Parallelen, dass man sie nicht ignorieren darf. Wir dürfen bei dem, was hier als Experiment abgeht, schlichtweg nicht mitmachen. Es dient ganz klar dazu, die Bevölkerung umzubringen, schwer gesundheitlich zu schädigen, dabei auch noch abzukassieren. Ein Nuklearangriff, sagt sie, wird nur deshalb nicht gemacht, weil die Gegenseite sich dann selbst gefährden würde. Die Oligarchen, aber auch Schwab und Gates, sind damals wie heute da. Sie können es aber nicht und konnten es auch damals nicht ohne die Unterstützung des medizinischen Establishments tun. Die Nürnberger Prozesse, die Ärzteprozesse haben uns den Weg gezeigt, den wir auch hier gehen müssen. Ärzte, die für die öffentliche Hand arbeiten, sind nie zur Verantwortung gezogen worden, so wie es heute auch aussieht. Das muss sich aber ändern, es wird sich auch ändern. Die T4 Vernichtung Lebens und Werten Lebens, da haben wir schon mal drüber gesprochen, das würde sich jetzt wiederholen. Die nutzlosen Esser werden jetzt und wurden jetzt schon erledigt, im wahrsten Sinne des Wortes, indem man genau weltweit, überall auf genau die gleiche Weise zuerst die Alten, dann die Behinderten, dann die schwangeren Frauen und jetzt am Ende die Kinder versucht zu impfen, das heißt umzubringen. Das T4-Programm ist in England wohl am weitesten entwickelt oder der Nachfolger des T4-Programms. Die Details können wir jetzt nicht ausbreiten, aber
Da werden wir noch drüber sprechen. Da sind tatsächlich Morphine und Mittel, die man gibt, um den Sterbeprozess zu erleichtern, in Anführungsstriche, in riesigem Maße ausgegeben worden. Nichts mehr als das, was wir jetzt gerade sehen können, nichts kann deutlicher beschreiben, dass es hier um Verbrechen gegen die Menschlichkeit geht, Crimes Against Humanity. Was wir vielleicht brauchen, sagt sie, ist, wir brauchen outrageous demonstrations. Ja, das denke ich auch. Die normalen Demonstrationen sind nicht so wirklich wirksam. Diese medizinische Diktatur zusammen mit diesen unsäglichen Public-Private Partnerships, die nichts anderes sind als feindliche Übernahmen der Öffentlichkeit oder der öffentlichen Institutionen durch superreiche private Institutionen. Das sei pilzartig in die Höhe geschossen seit der AIDS-Krise. Damals wollte Nelson Mandela im eigenen Land aus Kostengründen, weil es billiger ist, die entsprechende Medizin entweder herstellen oder importieren. Bill Gates, der Böseste vom Bösen, hat aber 39 verschiedene Firmen dazu gebracht, eine Klage gegen Südafrika einzureichen. Und damals hat alles begonnen, sagt sie. Es hat zwar Jahrzehnte gedauert, um die Medizin in diese Situation zu bringen. Eigentlich fing das ja schon Anfang des letzten Jahrhunderts an, als die Rockefellers plötzlich gedacht haben, wir machen uns jetzt neu auf und investieren in die pharmazeutische Industrie, die sie erfunden haben. Seitdem und insbesondere natürlich erst recht seit der eben beschriebenen Episode in Südafrika gibt es einen Preis auf das menschliche Leben. Hier sind abgestaubt worden die alten Politiklinien und Ideen der Nazis, sagt sie. Die Public Health Agencies sind sozusagen, also die öffentlichen Gesundheitsinstitutionen sind sozusagen übernommen worden, feindlich übernommen worden von den privaten Unternehmen. Über allem schwebt das Militär oder hinter allem schwebt das Militär. Und jetzt hat sie noch eine ganz, ganz wichtige Information uns gerade gegeben, die für uns vollkommen neu ist. Whitney Webb und Jeffrey Laredo haben eine direkte Eugenik-Verbindung zu den Covid-Impfstoffen gefunden. Und zwar aufgehängt an AstraZeneca. Die haben nämlich eine Menge bisher nicht öffentlich gewordene Verbindungen zu der, wie wir eben ausführlich auch gehört haben, mit einem neuen Namen versehenen British Eugenics Society, die englische Eugenik-Gesellschaft.
Dazu ist jetzt Galton Institut.
Ja, wie heißen die?
Galton,
nach Francis Galton, benannt, dem Erfinder. Ja, nach dem Erfinder der eugenischen Ideen, einem der wesentlichen jedenfalls. GlaxoSmithKline ist dabei. Und Adrian Hill, das ist der Chefentwickler in Oxford dieses Impfstoffs, AstraZeneca. Der ist mit denen ganz eng verbunden. Der Wellcome Trust gehört auch noch dazu. Es geht hier um, in Anführungsstrichen, verbesserte Eugenics. Die weitergehenden eugenischen Experimente werden derzeit schon mit AstraZeneca, in die Gates Foundation sehr viel Geld investiert hat. Diese eugenischen Experimente werden in Afrika durchgeführt. Die Hauptinvestoren sind frühere Executives, also wichtige Personen der Deutschen Bank. Das sind ja meine Lieblingsfreunde von Google. My best friends.
Yes, I know.
I'm gonna get these bastards. You know, it's high time. We gotta get them. Also Deutsche Bank, Google und natürlich auch die US-Regierung. Das Ganze funktioniert, weil die Regierungen, nicht die Bevölkerung, weil die Regierungschefs entweder geschmiert werden oder unter Druck gesetzt werden, weil man sie unter Druck setzen und erpressen kann. Womit, das werden wir noch hören. Eine weitere Sache, die sie noch anmerkt, ist die American Medical Association, also die Gesellschaft der amerikanischen Ärzte, hat vor etlichen Jahren die Liste ihrer Mitglieder an die pharmazeutischen Unternehmen verkauft. sodass die jetzt direkten Zugriff auf diese Leute haben. Was wir hier haben, ist medizinischer Mord, sagt sie. Medizinischer Mord, ich würde sagen, das stimmt. Und was es aber in den USA noch gibt, sind die sogenannten roten Staaten. Das sind die republikanischen Staaten und die machen nicht mit. I just hope, Vera, that their plan of getting us to attack each other is not going to unfold. And I think it won't. I know that there are a lot of people out there, one of them is Leslie Manoukian, who is afraid that there's going to be a civil war. I don't think there will be, because more and so many people are waking up to what's going on that I don't think that that's a real danger. I know it's there, and I know that if some people come to power, they're going to pursue this, they're going to try to push this. But I think there's so many of us who are right now waking up that that's not going to come to fruition.
Well, I hope so, that it really won't be again.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to add one more group that you should, along with the others, the Jeffrey and Whitney, and that's the Peer Bright Institute of London, okay? They're closely aligned with Gates and with Boehringer and Merck. Everybody's involved, you know, you notice. And the World Economic Forum. I mean, they're sort of all direct. It all kind of gets back to World Economic Forum, you know.
Yeah.
They're all members of it. And they have, now you may have that from David,
Martin?
Yeah, the patents, because the Peelbright has a patent, 216, for the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sie sagt, das Peelbright Institut aus London, was die Patente für die Impfstoffe hat, dazu, oder die hängen zusammen mit Gates, Boehringer, mit den üblichen Verdächtigen, Merck, aber auch mit dem World Economic Forum. Mhm.
Yeah, they're all interconnected, and, you know, I mean, this is not a secret, as Ilana said. A lot of what we know is because they themselves have documented it.
Yeah. It's all out there in the open.
You know, the plan is really very clear.
The plan is very clear. It's all out in the open. The only thing we have to do is not consent, and it'll be over.
But that's it, exactly. If people understood that, if people understood, I mean, well, I guess that's why my memory from, you know, way back really kicked up to the forefront, where it hadn't been. It'd been dormant for many years. But when I think about it, really, that at 6 years old, I defied authority. And I was nothing. I had nothing. But whatever it was in me, I was fighting for my life as I understood it. And in fact, I did. But it was really, and why? Because I assessed this nice family as somebody I could trust to take care of me. I knew I needed somebody to take care of me. And it wasn't going to be institutions or whoever gives orders. Somehow I knew that, I don't know, this is instinctive, really.
That's what it's all about.
But that's just it. The idea of annihilating people's compassion, people's ability to understand one human being to another, that's really what matters. That's what humans, that's what our DNA actually tells us to do.
Yeah.
And they're trying to simply eradicate that and replace it with gadgets, you know, with tech gadgets. Everyone is not, you don't need opium, you have to tech gadget.
Yeah.
It's really, it's very addictive. It's very addictive. You know, teenagers never see anyone except they're looking at their cell phone. In other words, virtual reality has replaced reality in real time.
And we're going to have to recapture our real reality. And
that's
we
right.
will. We're in the process of doing this, I think, right now.
And I think we're going to win because reality is much more fun and much more sexy than virtual reality.
Oh, absolutely. You know? That's the other part they want to get rid of. You know, I mean, it's not just the procreation, but the process, too. They don't want fun.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. That's right. It's inhuman. It's anti-human. It's everything that one should recoil from.
Yeah.
But this is the part that the general public really has no clue about. And if any mention of any aspect of it is made, they immediately dismiss it as conspiracy theory. I think it's time for us to lay out the conspiracies.
Yeah.
Instead of pretending that there are no conspiracies.
Yeah.
You know, because they've managed to do that, and language is important.
Yeah.
Vera sagte noch, als sie 6 Jahre alt war, hat sie sich gegen die Autoritäten gewendet, aber instinktiv, sagt sie, hat sie gemerkt, das ist ein Kampf ums Leben und hat sich letztlich einer Familie anvertraut, der sie glaubte, vertrauen zu können. Und die haben sie gerettet. So ist das passiert. Und diese Instinkte, sagt sie, das ist ja auch ein Bauchgefühl, das ist vielleicht spirituell, wie auch immer. Das ist jedenfalls der Kern unserer DNA. Und da hat sie, glaube ich, recht, das ist so. Und die andere Seite, ist nochmal betont worden, ist unmenschlich, antimenschlich. Und es wird Zeit, dass die Öffentlichkeit erfährt, dass diese Conspiracy Theories alle wahr sind, wie wir inzwischen gesehen haben. Okay, well, Vera, I'm so glad you came on with us again, because this is, at this point in time, this is so important. We're going to have to expose all these things. We have to tell the general public about the conspiracy
Absolutely.
Theories and how they're really true.
Yes, I think that's the only way. And because I think people will listen, because they're
too.
Really tired of this.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't want to hear that bullshit anymore.
I think at least those who speak straight,
yeah.
they're the quickest to get it. The ones that are hard to get are the ones with a couple of PhDs and MDs.
Exactly. Yeah.
they're the last ones. I can't believe it, but it's true. It's a fact.
It is true.
They more than anyone, they don't dare look sideways.
Yeah.
They don't dare. I guess because they suspect maybe
Yeah.
It's they're not really on firm ground, so they don't want to shake it up.
And that's a consequence of our system of education.
Absolutely.
This was done on purpose.
Yes. Absolutely. It cannot be otherwise that millions of people are walking around as if they're zombies.
Yeah. Yeah. And they are. Okay, well, Vera, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me again. I hope I didn't take up too much of your time.
Absolutely not. This is important. And we will definitely be in touch. Okay.
Take care.
See you later. Ilana, thank you so much for coming on again. I hope everything is going to turn out the way that we think it's going to turn out. But in reality, I don't have a doubt anymore. Not now.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, dann haben wir jetzt in der Leitung sowohl...
Ich möchte noch mal fragen, ob Sie noch irgendwas sagen möchte.
Ilana, is there something that maybe we... did I cut you off? Is there something that you wanted to tell us and I cut you off or something?
I mean, I could just say one last word that, I mean, there's, you know, Vera has really changed my thinking a lot throughout all of this, and I just to close, because of course there's so much to say, but I think that it's really so key. I just want to say that, you know, people look to leaders, I think on both sides, and they're always finding flaws and saying, well, I can't follow this guy because he, you know, he did whatever it is, whatever, such and such wrong. And I think the point is to learn, seek the truths that stand alone. And I think that's what's so profound about what Vera just said, is that there's a truth that she recognized as a young child that was, you know, that gave her the strength to defy authority. And it's exactly what's happened over these decades, if not centuries, is this, you know, this degrading of our intuitions, our cutting us off from real food and real touch and real feel and all of this type of thing. And I think that really what's key here, and what's the opportunity that's different in this exact same battle that we're, you know, weaving our way through in this, you know, grand scale, finally, is this opportunity to reframe, you know, what we can do now. The whole point of we are in this overloaded information age is to understand that, you know, those of us waking up to this corona tyranny, this bald face, extraordinary, atrocious lies, need to start applying that to all of these narratives that we've held for so long. I mean, I sit here in Israel, you know, we know that that's a dirty word in so many places, and the people who cannot differentiate the governing body of Israel and the Jewish people or the people who live here in Israel and give it all, we do have Israel, the governing body of Israel does have a leading role in this, but people give it also almost a mythical kind of power when we sit alongside, you know, the Vatican and eugenics of old. And I just want to say it's that reframing. You know, I think that those of us, it's been an extremely painful year in so many ways for so many of us. It's absolutely earthquake, you know, ground beneath our feet has been ripped out. And we've had to rebuild. And it's there is, I think you all mentioned before, there's immense gratitude in it. There's an immense gratitude in this widening, this deepening of thought and of consciousness, and it doesn't end. And it's really time to just recognize those narratives that they have played out across the news for a really long time, and to just allow that breakdown. You know, why I think there's another German activist who I'm friendly with who you know, noticed herself how when she, you know, when the anti-corona tyranny demonstrations were on the street, the police came quite brutally and ripped everybody apart if they were more close together. But the anti-Israel protests that were just prior were jam-packed and nobody said a word. And this is not about right, this is about a different narrative entirely. And this is about taking it back, and that is an opportunity we have. And it is exactly because we will not survive this if we do not, it is only with each other on the local and with each other on the international. And I really do see that that is exactly a consciousness that has not happened in this battle that we've seen throughout history. And, you know, just to say that, you know, there is a battle ahead, but we know it'll be good in the end. And if it's not good, then it's not the end. So, yeah.
Also, thank you, thank you. That's good. Also Ilana sagt, natürlich suchen die Leute sowohl auf der anderen Seite als auch bei uns immer nach Führern, nach Führungsfiguren. Aber sie sagt, die Wahrheit steht für sich alleine. Die braucht eigentlich gar keine so eine Führerstütze. Das funktionierte ja schon auch bei Vera, die damals die Kraft hatte, sich gegen die Autorität zu wehren. Aus irgendeiner Eingebung heraus hat das bei ihr funktioniert. Der Schlüssel, sagt Ilana jetzt, zu allem ist, dass wir hier erkennen müssen, das ist eine Gelegenheit, uns sozusagen neu aufzustellen, zu reframe. Das ist eine erdbebenmäßige Erschütterung zwar, aber wir sollten gleichzeitig dankbar sein für die vielen Erkenntnisse, die wir dabei gewinnen, damit wir endlich sehen können, was hier wirklich los ist und sehen können, dass wir hier die ganze Zeit getäuscht wurden. Das Überleben, sagt sie, können wir nur zusammen. Alleine wird man nicht überleben, es wird nur zusammengehen. It's a great closing word. Thank you. Thank you, Ilana. Thank you, Vera.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.